Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Welcome to Narrative Aspirations. We're going to open up with Allah's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer, and redeem he does. A'udhu billahi minash shaitan ar-rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Rahman Rahim, Maliki Yawmiddin, Iyaka Na'budu wa Iyaka Nasta'in, Ihdina Sirata Mustaqim, Sirata Ladina An'amta Alayhim, Ghayril Maghdubi Alayhim, Waladdallin. I mean. Again, welcome to Narrative Aspirations. I'm your host, Sister Khalida Akbar. Today we are going to be talking about two topics. The very first one will be presented by Brother Cornelius Majid. And then, inshallah, we will be joined again by Imam Shahid Abdullah, whose focus is culture. And so we wanted to bring both of them here tonight because they both have a perspective that is going to help us remake the world into a better place for our people, starting with self. So we want you to make sure that you press 1 to come into the queue at any moment that you feel you want to share. I will be checking the queue periodically throughout evening. All right. So
Yes.
Yes, brother.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can.
Yes,
hear
can you?
You.
Okay, very good.
Okay, so yes,
okay,
I was going to give
go ahead.
Just a brief introduction, if I may. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Okay, so this is Brother Cornelius Majid. And his last name, Majid, from the late leader Imam Muhammad. He was given that name from Imam Muhammad Rahim Allah Alay. He is an author and a screen and playwright, a director. Tonight he's going to be speaking on some material concerning Imam W.D. Muhammad's community. It's what he calls our third resurrection. So we're delighted to have him here with us today to give us some enlightenment on what he calls the third resurrection. Okay, so we are going to welcome him. He quoted Imam Muhammad as once saying in one of his lectures that the number 3 represents completion. And there are 3 stages of development: mental, spiritual, and material. All right, so keep that in mind. He farther stated, if either of those stages are lacking, the human being is not complete. So that is a great part of what Brother Cornelius Majid's book, his latest book, is about. And he will be explaining this to us tonight. So get ready to give him a warm welcome. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Cornelius Majid, and welcome to Narrative Aspirations.
Thank you a lot, Sister Kalina. I really appreciate that. And all the believers that's here tonight that's listening in to the broadcast. This is something that I have really wanted to do for some time now. It all started when Imam Muhammad made his transition to We Know Paradise. All praise due to Allah. The mission that our first leader, Elijah Muhammad, started was considered our mental awakening. He would always say he's going to wake up the mentally dead African American. Then after he got through with all of that of waking us up mentally from the death we was in, our second leader that came in, Imam Muhammad, his mission was all about waking up us who were spiritually dead and bringing us into the real religion of Al-Islam. So both of those missions was successful. We was risen from those graveyards, that mental graveyard and that spiritual graveyard. But the material graveyard that I'm speaking of tonight, and which is also what my book is about, is that material graveyard that we are still in. And I don't care what you say or how you say it, we're still in that material graveyard. And I call it our third resurrection, to be resurrected out of that graveyard, like we was out of the mental resurrection with Elijah and the spiritual resurrection with Imam W.D. Muhammad. So when Imam passed back to that, something wasn't complete, because he always told us that 3 represents completion. So I went back into his lectures and his notes. As being from Chicago, born and raised, now I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, we was kind of lucky to hear the Imam every first Sunday at the Homewood Hotel. And I would try and get that first seat. So I would always keep all these notes. So I went back in some of those notes about that number 3 and all that about being complete. And if you don't have three stages, you're not complete. And based on all of that information is what helped me write this book, The Third Resurrection, A Sure Reality of Our Material Rise from Dust to Industry. So back to the material graveyard that we're in. Now, don't want to get ahead of myself and don't want to move too fast or too slow. New Africa should have been, from my understanding, built. It's only some land with some houses, a hospital, bank, something that people do every day. It ain't no big deal. But now, by our community being materially dead, that's exactly what's happening. We're materially dead. We don't have the funds to build New Africa. Imam been dead now for 15 years. And may Allah bless him with the paradise and a beautiful home. And by now, we should have been through with New Africa. It should have been built, and we should be living in it now as we speak. But before we get to that point, we got to be raised from this material graveyard that we're in. Now, I'm going to pause there for a minute and let everybody kind of think on what I just said and digest it a little bit. That there's three stages of growth that complete the human being based on what our leader, Imam W.D. Muhammad, said. And we are missing that last stage, that material stage. We haven't risen yet materially. And it shows in our community life and in our personal life. We have Muslims right today that's on welfare. We have Muslims right today that is homeless. We have Muslims right today that don't even know where their next meal is coming from. We have Muslims today that can't make Hajj, can't get married. It's almost as sick as it was when we was mentally dead, didn't know the knowledge of ourselves, didn't know our names, didn't know our culture, and then also as bad as when we didn't even know the real God, when we came into that spiritual awakening. So this material death that we're in is just as serious as our mentally dead situation was and our spiritually dead situation was. So it can't be knocked. And that's why it's so important for me to get busy around the community with this book, The Third Resurrection, because we got to be risen materially, so we can go on to that next phase of completion. Now, I would like to see if Sister Akbar have something to mention before I move on.
No, you've done a great job. Go ahead and give us the requirements of being materially dead and tell us a little bit more about that, inshallah.
Okay, very good. All praises due to Allah. I pray Allah to continue to guide my voice and bless me with the knowledge to make this plain, like Malcolm say, to my audience and to my community, Imam W.D. Muhammad's community. I've been a part of this community since I was about 19 to 20 years old. I growed up in this community. I feel this community is a part of me, and I'm a part of it. And that's why I'm speaking like I'm speaking. Now, one of the steps to get out of this is our imams must take the lead. They must begin around the country that if they are not business people that can wake us up materially and bring us into a material awakening, then they need to get the people who's qualified to do it. so that we can get out of this state that we are in. And one other thing that our imams, I got to put it on the leadership. I can't go ahead of the leadership. Imam, that's another thing. Imams say always respect the leadership. So our imams have another resurrection. I know they done stopped on the second resurrection. They just done stopped on the spiritual. I'm not trying to knock them. I love them all. I know them all. The ones that's still here and the ones that gone on. May Allah bless them with the paradise. But they have got to go to that next level. They heard the imam's teaching just like me, that three represents completion. They know we ain't had but two resurrections. They know we are still dead materially. And most of you all know that. I mean, go in your pocket. How much money you got? I mean, check your bank account out. I almost said once that I don't think, and I'm not trying to criticize our community. Like I said, I've been here ever since I was 19. This is my community. I'm it and it's me. But I don't think if a Muslim in our community can go in his pocket and in the bank got $3 or $4 million that's not hooked into properties or not invested into something. I'm talking about cash. And after 75 years of our evolution, this the shape we in, that goes to show materially we are still dead. We haven't been risen like we have mentally and spiritually. So once again, the imams have one more to go, like our leader said, three stages of growth and development. And without those three, he said, ain't nothing happening. You can have all the mental awakeness that you want. You can have all the spiritual awakeness. But if you can't apply those two because you ain't got no material substance, and I'm going to speak of money, if you can't apply those two stages that you have, the mental and the spiritual, it's kind of like you ain't even got them. That's why we got all of this knowledge, mentally and spiritually, but nobody sees us in the world. We're not on the map because we don't have no physical buildings and houses and this on the map. Now, I know somebody said, well, brother so-and-go got a restaurant. Brother so-and-so got a so-and-so. Sister so-and-so got a clothing thing. But these things are so small and they individually. I'm talking about something we could see, like New Africa. What a world can see, that we got hospitals, we got banks, we got an airport, we got homes, we got apartment buildings, we got senior homes, we got mental homes, we got recreation center. We got all of these things that the world could see materially. Not no brother got a stove or a sister got a sewing machine. After 75 years, that's where we are. We are mentally dead. And I think materially dead, excuse me. We are materially dead. And I thank Allah for blessing me with the inspiration based on listening to our leader and his concept of three stages of development, his completion, that enabled me to complete this book. And now I need to circulate that book to our community so we could be about rising materially from this materially death of the graveyard materially that we are in. Because I say our community have came to a standstill until we accumulate some wealth. Because I see all of the stuff that's going on, but everybody get to a certain point and they can't move. And you know what that point is? The point where you need some money. Now, this happened personally, and this happened in our community. I've been there a million times myself, and I'm sure everybody who's listening on this broadcast has been there too. And we're going to go up there again until we solve this problem that we have, this mentally dead materially dead, excuse me, materially dead situation that we have. So that's basically what my conversation is about, and that's basically what my book is about, and that's basically what my mission is about, to see if I can help the imams that we have be about the business of waking us up from this materially dead situation that we're in. Because it's only, they said the devil affects you with poverty. That's what the Quran said, and calls you to act unseemly. And that's what's happening with us. Because you get to a point where if you can't feed your family, or you can't pay your rent, a brother might steal, a brother might lie, a brother might do something and say, you know, he's in jail. A sister might have to, God forbid, might have to sell her body because she don't have no money for the kids to eat, no clothes, no food. The devil excites you with poverty and calls you to act unseemly. So that's my story. That's my book. And I thank Almighty God, Allah, for blessing me to read between the lines and see between the lines of what our leader, ma'am, was speaking in a lot of his lectures about those three stages of growth and development that caused me to be right here today talking about this situation the way I'm talking about it. And we got to rise materially now. We might be alive mentally, and we might be alive spiritually, and all praise is due to Allah. But materially, we are still dead. And it shows in our personal life and our community life.
Alhamdulillah, Rabbi.
And that's yes, my sister.
Impressive, but being spiritually dead. And so when we pose a problem or an issue, we always try to come up with solutions. And so we want, first of all, for you to give us the title of your book, how we can access it, and what you cover in your book, and then we want you to give us an overview of some of the solutions that you, as a researcher, have researched that will help us out of this situation, inshallah.
Yeah,
before we go
this,
to a stage four.
Great. Okay. The name of the book is Imam W.D. Muhammad's Community's Third Resurrection, A Sure Reality, From Dust to Industry, written by Cornelius Majeed. You could get the book if you go on my Facebook page. You can get the information about purchasing the book from my Facebook page. All the things about websites and everything that goes with it is in the process of being established because, like I said, this is a relatively new book that I have out that I'm promoting, so I got to put a lot of the little technicalities together so it can be available, and that will happen overnight. I'm going to make sure everybody in the community has a copy of this book. So just be cool for a minute, and all of the information on how you can get this book going to be all in your face. Every time you look up, you're going to see how you can purchase your book. But right now, you can contact and purchase through Facebook, and I will make it even more known today after this lecture on places you can go and how you can even have it downloaded. If you don't want it mailed out, you can have it downloaded to your particular computer or what have you. Okay, another question. How you go about doing this? Well, number one, like I said, this is a responsibility that is on our imams. They know our material condition that we're in. They know we are poor materially and that we are dead materially. Most of them know this. So what they need to stop doing, and it's just my point, is having both sides of the cookbook spiritual. Now, I'm sure on Friday, when the imam go down and come back up, after speaking about Rasulullah and the religion, from what I was told, Rasulullah, the prophet, said the second half of the khutbah is supposed to be about the needs of the community. Most of our imams don't do two khutbahs in the perspective that it should go. They do both sides of their khutbah spiritually instead of having the first part spiritual and the second part should be about our material needs, because if Rasulullah say that that second part should be about the needs of the community, our needs as well. Most of our needs as well. I mean, new people just coming in, I mean, they need teaching. And you then gave them that first part. But most of us, that second part needs to be about the needs of the community. So the first thing to get about the business of trying to resurrect us materially is stop doing both sides of the khutbah spiritually. Do one side spiritually and the other side materially. That's how it's supposed to go from what I was told Rasulullah, peace and blessing upon him, the way he broke it down. Now, when they do discuss money, the imams, and I got to put the pressure on them because they are the leaders, and you're all supposed to take it to the leader when something needs to be done. They have got to be about the business of making our material thing come to a reality. That's their job. I'm going to do all I can to influence it and motivate it and help. But that's a job that our imams have, my sister, to come up with some changes on how we're going to get out the poorhouse. I mean, I can do it on a personal level. You could do it personal. But on a community level, they need to come together as imams and see can't they come up with some billions and billions of dollars to start building New Africa and taking care of all us poor people in this community. If they going to say they leaders of each one of these perspective messages, that they are over. The only time I see them really going, getting down about money, and I'm not knocking them, I love them all, but I got to tell the truth. The only time I see them getting down about money is when they ask them for zakat, so that they can keep the lights and gas and stuff on for the masjid. And all that's good. But you got to go beyond that. You got to get a little more for the people, too, and to establish things for the community. So the changes, my sister, to make it, to get going with raising us up from that material graveyard, it's got to start with our leaders, which is our imams.
Alhamdulillah. So I do understand that leadership is crucial to making change. We also have to be balanced as well, and we have to assume accountability for our actions as adults in our community. So one of the things that we can look at is the four bird strategy, and I know we've talked about that before, not you and I, but many people online, and Imam W.D. Muhammad Rahimullah Alay, he talked about how to establish New Africa, and that one of the components, all of the four components go as follows. We need business, education, culture, and government. And we know religion goes under culture, okay? And so with that said, we need to look at all aspects of building, you said, building material wealth. Because if you're not educated, you can build it and lose it. And we cannot put just... Because we're spiritual people, I understand where you're coming from, and we do put a lot of stake in our leadership. We listen to them. We look for them for guidance, and they are motivators. They're public speakers. They're life changers, no doubt. And so that is a very good starting point for us as African-American people in general, not just Muslims, because we are very spiritual, and a lot of our motivation comes from our houses of faith traditionally. So we need to look at how we can inspire that and bring that education into that, because just because someone is a spiritual leader does not mean that they have the knowledge or the resources to talk about financial wellness. So we can start with education.
That's why I said, my sister, that's why I said that most of them don't have the knowledge, but they have got to get to people that do have the knowledge. That is their job as a leader. Okay, for instance, if you a leader You got to be a leader. Ain't no way out. Now, if you want a way out, then you don't need to be calling yourself no leader. See, because a leader means to lead. So if they're not qualified, because most of them are not businessmen, I feel you. I know most of them. Then they need to hire or they need to find out where are the businessmen that can make this happen. But now here's the thing about the bottom line. They need to be the leaders. They got to make it happen. Ain't no excuses. Just when you walk out there and say you the E-man, ain't no excuses no more. And we can't say, well, he couldn't do it. He don't know. No, no. If you can't, you don't know. You got to get the people who do, like Elijah.
Right.
Let's go back to the – let me show you an example in Elijah. Elijah had a third-grade education. I don't know no imams who as on that level today with a third-grade education. And look what he did. No excuses. He was the leader. He got the people to make it happen. He's example for all the imams to go by so they won't try and come up with an excuse.
Yes.
There's no excuses.
With all due respect, yes. With all due respect, we are going to take a station break, and I want us to look at more solutions. We get that the imams are a starting point. They can teach, but they can't live our lives for us. So we need to look at how we are going to provide education. And you did come up with that solution through the khutbah. Whoever the khatib is will do half on spiritual and half on material. And so, inshallah, that is a starting point. And we do want to get feedback. So if you are listening, we need you to press 1 to come into the queue. We're going to take a station break. And when we're going to come back, we're going to delve a little deeper into material wealth and material wellness. And also look at the prerequisites for that. Another thing is change always begins with self. So we want you to share openly, as you are doing, how you have implemented some of these strategies in your own life and what difference has it made for you when we come back, inshallah. We'll be right back after
this
station break.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to AM 360. Join your host, Manira Habil, every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we explore relationship topics addressing what we didn't know, what we've learned, and what we need to know and why. Because on this show, it's all about courtship and marriage.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Nirmat Shaheed, restorative justice practitioner for the Oakland Unified School District and host on AM 360's The Pearls of Women Quranic Mondays. We're asking you to help us make a difference in the life of a student. We need you to spread the word that CWSC is offering 5 college scholarships in the form of direct financial aid to students who qualify and are graduating from high school this year or current college students. Learn more and apply online today at cwsc.us. But hurry, the deadline for applications is June the 20th. Thank you for helping secure our next generation's intelligentsia. Assalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, and we are back, and I'm your host, Sister Khalida Akbar, joining you live from Charlotte, North Carolina, with Narrative Aspirations. When we aspire, we go higher. And one of the thought processes that I had when creating this blog broadcast was the person who came on will give us what Allah inspired them to do. And that's why we focus on individuals who are remaking the world using the gifts and talents that Allah gave them. So tonight we have a special guest, Brother Cornelius Majid, who is sharing with us his perspective on where we need to go as a people and the emphasis that needs to be focused on or put and placed on material wealth and wellness, okay? And so we have also with us Imam Shahid Abdullah. I don't know if he had a question at this time or not, but he did press one. So we're going to give him an opportunity to ask the question. And if not, if you would just hold off just a little longer, we're going to get to some information from Brother Cornelius Majid on how he is making practical application in his own life. And so that would help us better understand his solution-oriented approaches, inshallah. Imam Shahid Abdullah, did you have a question or a comment? Okay, so he does not at this time. He's waiting to come into the queue. Brother Cornelius Majid, can you go ahead and tell us how you are implementing one or two strategies? You don't have to tell us the whole book, but we do need some type of idea of how you are going about remaking the world using the strategies that you are writing about in your book, inshallah.
All praise due to Allah. Very good, very good. First of all, let me say this is a great broadcast. This is great. Thank Allah for this, sister. This is a great thing that you have put together for the believers to come together and communicate like this here and see what they're trying to do to remake the world. This is great. Okay.
Alhamdulillah.
On the side. Yes, go ahead. Yes, go ahead, sister. Was you about to say something? My sister. As-salamu alaykum. Was you about to say something, my sister? I say, was you about to say something?
I'm sorry. I know I went off. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Okay, good.
Can you hear me?
Spiritual. Well, yes, I can hear you. So this is an example of passing something on for other people to benefit from. And that is what I think another one of our concerns needs to be, wanting for our brother and sister, what we want for ourselves, and looking at how we can start with individuals, couples, families, and communities, because that's truly where it starts, and how we can implement these healthy strategies into our daily life. Because that's how we're going to really make change. But go ahead, inshallah, and give us your information, please. We have some callers in the queue.
Well,
would you like to take this? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
Would you like to take this question first or no? Because it looks like you have a couple questions.
Any way you want to do it. Yeah, they could do the questions, then I'll come in after that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so
I'll take the questions.
Okay, so we're going to go to 919-200. Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to Narrative Aspirations. Your question or comment, please.
Assalamu alaikum. This is 619-200. Were you?
Yes, ma'am. It is 619-200. Thank you very much.
Yes. Okay, so I was just wondering, you know, New Medina, my name is Laura Hamid. I'm from San Diego, California, and I'm from Lincoln, Brother Majid. I appreciate listening to you. I was just wondering why...
Wa alaykum as-salam.
Why New Medina, who has followed the concept of the four birds, is struggling. Why do you think that is?
You asking me that question?
Oh, either one of you.
It's a simple question, sister. It's a very simple question. It's following the four birds is one thing, but in this world, you got to have some money. New Medina is failing because they don't have cash money. If New Medina had some millions, 10 million or 100 million or maybe not that much, they could have been and built New Medina. See, the birds, the four birds is more spiritual. It's more of a concept of directions that you want to go. But the bottom line is that concrete is that money, that tangible money, you know, M-O-N-E-Y is what builds things in this country. I mean, you could talk about everything, and when you get through talking, like the old people say, you got to put your money where your mouth is. See, so that's why New Medina is like they are, like me. I'm working on, I'll bring this in now. I have four major movies that I hope to be out soon that's going to make millions and billions, inshallah. Now, I can take $50 million down to Medina and have it built in a year's time, whatever it is they're trying to do. But it's got to be cash. All the talk now. What they said, talk is cheap. That's the problem with New Medina. They need cold cash.
Okay, thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Alaikum assalam. Okay, sister, do you want me to continue?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, sister, for calling in. We appreciate that question. Thank you very much. And that is something
Is there any more questions? Are there more questions?
Let me double check and see. I don't see any more questions in the queue at this time. If you have a question or comment, please press 1 to come into the queue. And we're going to go ahead and let Brother Cornelius Majid go ahead and tell us about his strategies for implementing material wellness.
Well, my strategy, sister, is that I'm a playwright and screenwriter. My thing is in movies. Everybody, when they get home and finish doing what they're doing, they're watching TV or a movie or something, or listening at some music. So my money-making thing is in writing movies and scripts and films. Like I said, I have four major movies that, inshallah, will be out next year. And this is how I'm going to make my billions and millions of dollars through the film industry. This is how I make money through movies, plays, films. That's my job, along with books and what have you that I wrote. I got four books out. This is one that we're talking about now. I got four other published books. So my money is through films, movies, what have you. And inshallah, I plan to support and help our community through the production of movies and films and what have you. That's my strategy of building and establishing New Africa. Because movies nowadays, they get stupid movies out that pays people $100 billion. So if that's the way they're going now, I'm in the right field.
Yes. Okay, alhamdulillah. So
my movies ain't stupid. My movies ain't stupid.
Okay.
Go ahead,
so mashallah. Okay, so we're going to thank you for that perspective, that overview, and bringing our attention to that current situation here in our community and beyond. So we are going to give Imam Shahid Abdullah an opportunity to come in and share maybe his perspective or give us some information about culture. I thought it was relevant because he has been talking with us for several months now in reference to building a culture and promoting material wealth through identifying ourselves first, finding out who we are as African Americans, and being able to look at our history, because we are a new people and move forward to establishing the new Africa. So inshallah, you can meet in the middle and we can get some solutions here tonight. So we're going to give you both an opportunity to come back and speak at the very end. At this time, we're going to go to Imam Shahid Abdullah. Assalamu alaikum, Imam Shahid Abdullah, and welcome to the Vast.
There's a lot of static noise in the background. Somebody still have their mic. They have to mute their phone. I could barely hear the brother when you're speaking.
Oh wow. Okay, so let me make sure. Is that better?
Oh, that's much better. Well, let me first greet you and the listeners and Brother Majid, because I've known the brother quite a while, and he's done a lot of good work and still doing it. But I just want to just say assalamu alaikum and in terms of greeting, and with Allah's name, the most merciful benefactor, most merciful redeemer, all praise is due to Allah. Yes. Praise him and seek help from him, and we ask forgiveness from him. I bear witness there is no deity except Allah alone, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger, his servant to all mankind. And Brother Majid, it's good to hear your voice. Assalamu alaikum to you and the listeners.
Assalamu alaikum. Good to hear your voice too, my brother.
Yes, you have to keep, like as you know, you have to keep up the work. Regardless on the viewpoint, as long as we have faith in the viewpoint, and asking Allah's guidance, then we have a great opportunity of being successful. As you know, Imam Muhammad has said that and also the Quran says, and we say after the Quran, if Allah is with you, can none be against you. So we think like that as Muslims, and we operate like that as Muslims. So the main thing is that we have to begin to move in a way, as you said, to bring ourselves together. There was a time when when Imam Muhammad first came in office, I was a minister at that time. I had left Newark and went to Martinsville, Virginia to help out with a temple that was started down there by some brothers and several families. And we did very well. And one of the things that Imam Muhammad wrote when he came in office, he wrote to all of the ministers of that time, and he emphasized a statement in that letter about culture. And it didn't strike me odd, but it brought me some relief, because I believe in the concept of nation, and as we said, the Nation of Islam, I did some research on my own and saw that those things that evolve so independent of the culture in which they're in don't always have a great success. It does one or two things. It either overthrows the culture it's in, it becomes more than subservient, usually it's crushed in that culture, because the culture then defends itself against what they would see as an oncomer or an attacker. I sort of saw that. So I was pleased to hear Imam Muhammad talk about culture. But he went immediately after he got into office, he only said a few things about it. And then he went to work trying to release our minds, release our thinking from such a materialistic way we have been put into or brought into a reality, because we are brought into a reality spiritually, primarily when Farad Muhammad started teaching African Americans in Detroit, he brought them in spiritually, primarily talking about the religion of Islam and the value of knowing self. And he even created an idea about we are the Asiatic black man, the law-found tribe of Shabazz. He gave us an identity. He gave us a cultural identity because he knew he was an educator. He was known as Professor Farad. He was great knowledge from – he knew that cultures are what causes people to come alive. And if the culture doesn't cement itself with any group of people, then it just fades away. And then that people just fades away or become extinct. So he created a situation for us. He created the a situation, the nation of law-found nation of Islam. He created that. He created the idea we are from the tribe of Shabazz, tribe of Shabazz. We're the lost-found nation of Islam here in the wilderness of North America. He created all that scenario. He put together a picture by which those of us who would hear it would have to make a decision. We would have to make a decision as to believing that was the cause of our situation in America, or we rejected what he would say. We said, no, I don't believe that. Or we would say, yes, that's why we have such a big problem in America today, because of that, because of what he brought out. And, of course, he identified the corporate as the European American, or what was called then the white man. He called them actually the KB. The Caucasian white man, Yakuz Graf the Devil. That was the terminology he gave for that time and of the people. He said was the cause of the problem of all black people. All he used the term black, not African American. He was trying to bring about this connection that we could begin just a mental. Not necessarily mental, we use the term resurrection. Now, Brother Majid used the term resurrection. I could continue with that because that's what we all termed at that time. But it was a form of reshaping the mind to think in another process, to think in another way, to think of yourself as something other than what the European American had made us think of ourselves as his servant. To think of ourselves as people who really was in a higher place than any place on earth, higher than any other civilization, think of ourselves as great and even use the term God. See, so, and definition, he broke down the term and what it meant and how those things came into existence with his thinking. But whether we say it's right or wrong, one thing for sure, we have certain proof and factual proof that it had an impact on the African-American people. And that's what we're measuring. We're measuring did what he did have an impact on the African-American people and thus having an impact on America. And it did. It had a tremendous impact. And it wasn't, I used to think myself, it was millions and millions and millions of us, but it really wasn't. At some of the highest numbers that in the Nation of Islam at that time, really was around 700,000, and maybe a million or so. But not the it's in America alone, there's 42 million African Americans. See, so even if we were a million, we're still a very, very small amount. But the impact that made on America was tremendous, especially when young brothers came in like Malcolm X and other. But at the time, he was a young brother out of prison. His mind had been reshaped and redone in that day and time, and it created such a powerful vision in the mind of the people that they were speaking to. That vision started to take some reality, some meat got on the bones, some flesh got on the bones, and we could see a nation in our minds. We could see a mother plane in our minds. We could see all those things because of the what they were giving us during that time, and it was building this idea of a material world, that really exists, in which we know the world is material, but a material world in which we exist that the Quran sort of talks about it as the use the word dunya, meaning not the earth and all of what's in the earth. It primarily means what is made out of what's in the earth, like money, for example, like jewelry and things of that nature. That the behavior of the people around those particular aspects in terms of value, that's the dunya. That make up the dunya. It takes you in another direction other than the natural evolution that Allah has for the human being based on the natural evolution of life, based on the natural evolution of plants, animals, and things of that nature. We were so that the dunya can take you off course very quickly. We can get a love for money. We can get a love for jewelry. We can love for, in case of male, we can love for a female, in case of female, love for male, and that all can drive us a different direction. We can get a love for drugs. That would drive us in another direction. Whatever would grab our mind will bring about a sensation in us to take us in a direction toward the dunya and serving the dunya and away from that which Allah had created for us to evolve in. And that was the kind of situation we were being put into. Well, you could use that term, put into, but that's the kind of situation that we found ourselves in, not in the sense of force or someone tricked us in it. We found ourselves in it because we wanted to be in it. We wanted to be part of this new and way of thinking, this life given teaching that with vitality. And those of you who were part of that, you know exactly what I'm expressing, and because you had to feel it. You could explain it, and we can explain it well. Many of us can explain it much, much better than I am. But you could feel it no better. The feeling to be in that movement, to be in that time of that essence of the African-American people grabbing hold to something they think is greater than what they had been given by the European-American and believing that that will lift them above everything else on the planet. That was a great feeling. And when Imam Muhammad came, he built on the aspect which we were missing most. When I say missing most, I mean in that time period. What the Honorable Elijah Muhammad concluded with in what he was developing, he got the spirituality from Master Farad, and then he came with the do for self, the building of the material world. We had to build the material world, and he did a wonderful job. In fact, he did in his time what no other African American had done in their time. And he did it with less. I believe the brother mentioned that he only had a third grade education. Well, some other African Americans didn't have much education because it wasn't a real popular thing with our people at that time. But at the same time, they all weren't as successful as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was. He had gotten a group of people together to believe in a cause, and at one time we had imported more fish, Whitey H and G, into America than any other people or company had done before he did it. It's still a record. The ideas that he put into the mind of the young African American people on how to do for self just caught fire in the communities. And everywhere you could see and go, you would see the Muslims, assalamu alaikum, selling the Muhammad Speaks newspaper, all these different things. And as I said, more than a million of us, it just looked like that. And that was the impact we was having on the media. The media was feeling it. The media was feeling it because they didn't know how to accept it. They didn't know how to deal with this new expression. And they didn't know how to deal with this new expression. See, so we were getting a lot of attention. I was getting some feedback that somebody got their phone open. They need to mute your phone.
Yes, Imam Cornelius Majid, mic open. Yes, go ahead, Brother Imam. And if you could touch on a little bit of what he was referring to as the spiritual material death. I know you're doing that.
Right.
Thank you.
All right. And the main thing is that that is where the material idea came from, that particular time of doing to self. And then Imam Muhammad came with, he didn't have as much emphasis on that at first, but he had to straighten out our understanding of religion. He had to straighten out our understanding of Islam, what is Islam, and what how it could best benefit us as a people, as individuals and as a group. That was his greatest task, to convince us and to show us how to study the Quran, how to study the Arabia to get out of the Quran was beneficial to us as a people, that we wouldn't have to be led by some other people from another part of the world who said they were Muslim or they understood Quran better than we did. So that was Imam Muhammad's responsibility. And once he did that, he began to express the importance of building a wealth again. He began to express the idea of building something of our own. He began to develop with the clothes, the Graceline clothes. He had other things he would begin to import, and would have been exporting too, but importing shea butter and things of that nature to give us a sense of urgency that we needed to develop materially, financially. But we're in the, as Brother Majid brought out, we're in a third resurrection now. See, if you go through the first resurrection, the dealing for doing for self with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Master Farad, and then the second resurrection with Imam Warfi Muhammad, then okay, we're in the third resurrection, then what is our responsibility? Certainly our responsibility cannot rest on the imam because we did that. That's the way the Christians do with the preachers. They rest on the preachers. No, I think it's much bigger than that. I think that we are closer to the Quran when Quran teaches that every single one of us is his own representative between him and Allah. There's nothing to stand between an individual and Allah. We don't have an intercessor. The imam is not an intercessor for either, none of us. No imam is an intercessor for us. The only thing that stands before the individual and Allah, especially on the day of judgment, would be his behavior. What he had done during his lifetime would be his example and what Allah would judge him by. See, so we're looking at a sort of different time now. We're looking at a time, certainly we got to get wealth, but the irony of that thinking is that our people were already wealthy. In fact, if you would look at the wealth of the African-American today, we'd be one of the ninth richest economies in the world, all the money that come into the African-American community. The idea is the way we think. Our process of thinking has to come alive. Our process of thinking in terms of a culture, not just in terms of a person that's going to make money. That's one aspect. The individual, even in America, and we can talk about racism and all other things, but in America, if the individual would focus on human capital, his human capital, his skills and his abilities, and they could be marketed into any world or any commercial world, he would maybe be successful. This is why we have African-Americans being successful in America, judges and so forth and so on, billionaires. We don't have as many as we should, but we do have them. We have millionaires. We have people going toward these ideas of gaining wealth because we're in that environment. And a person that comes alive in this environment can achieve something as an individual. He can become a millionaire as an individual. And he could teach his children and so forth and so on. But the key to generational wealth does not rest in the individual. The key to generational wealth rests in the culture. What is the culture of the people? What does that culture dictate for the people? How did it dictate their lives? Look at the Jewish culture. How did it survive all these hundreds and thousands of years? And they're merchants. They market this merchant idea amongst their people as part of their cultural life. They have their religious life, business life, all intact in one movement in terms of their merchants. They've been merchants for since time, and they don't even produce things in many countries. They're not a people who just produce things, but they are products. Well, they are a people who shows how to move money from one space to the next, how to move material things from one person to the next person, and they make money on doing that. That's their process. That's the process that their culture continues to take them through thousands of years, hundreds of years, and keep them growing. and keep them so alive that they actually control many of the Western societies because they control the money. They control the movement of money. They control the diamonds and the movements of diamonds. They control the mineral wealth. They control the movement of it. And because they control the movement of it, they look like they are in control. But this goes with their culture. If their culture didn't teach them about being a merchant, then they would be suffering the same way all the other cultures or people would suffer who don't realize what's going on when it comes to being a merchant. This is where we are. As African-American people, we have to do what Imam Muhammad suggested. When he suggested in 2000, he said that he was talking to a group of people in the University of North Carolina down there in your neck of the woods, I believe it was High Point. No, maybe not High Point. I think it was not Durham, but it was where was it? North Carolina, no, but it's in North Carolina.
Raleigh?
Where he was, no, not Raleigh. It's up
Raleigh?
By Asheville. Who said it? No, it wasn't Charlotte. It was by Asheville. That African American Central, North Carolina Central, I think it was. But at any rate, he said that, brothers, don't forget your culture. You must embrace your culture. He used the term black. And he used the word culture, and he used the word African-American. He used those terms. He said, you have a unique culture, and you have to live that uniqueness. Don't forget it. See, those are the words that he was trying to get us to not just nibble on. He wanted us to gobble these words. He wanted us to just take these words in full, this idea of culture. He wanted us to look at it and see the power that culture have on delivering the people and putting the people into the future. If your culture does not hold itself and hold its people, they can't get into the future. Whatever money they make in the present, some another culture will go take it over in the future. Just like this country at one time used to belong to the Native American. Where are they? They're not around. Some of them are in our blood. Some of them are Europeans in our blood, Africans in our blood. But the Native Americans is just about gone. Some of those people, like the Massachusetts, a tribe called Massachusetts, extinct. The Mohegan, Brother McGee probably remember that movie, The Last of the Mohegan, that was out when we was young coming along. They're gone. And there's several other tribes, or not tribes, the nations of Native Americans, gone, doesn't exist. Now, we may think that can't happen to us, but that's our own arrogance, because it certainly can happen to us. And we've read in the scriptures and Quran, the Bible, and the Torah, where it happened to Sodom and Gomorrah, other places. You just go through all the mythologies and all other things, you see how nations have disappeared, became extinct, became destroyed. And Allah says that's what he does. Now, there's a way that Allah does that. And if we pay attention to it, we can avoid it. But if we don't pay attention to it, same thing can happen to us. And it is that the sub-replacement fertility rate, that's a law in the creation, the sub-replacement fertility rate, which simply means that every group, race, culture, no matter what it is, the women of that culture must produce two children, was 2.05, but two children in their lifetime that lives to the age of 15. She must replace herself, and she must replace her mate. If that does not happen at that rate, they will gradually become extinct because we can't reproduce fast enough to stay with the death rate and all other catastrophes that happen to man. We know a lot of catastrophes happen to the African-American people, being shot and so forth and so on, and drugs and all those things kicking us out pretty fast. But the average African-American has no idea about the sub-replacement fertility rate, and they really think we are having more children now when we are down to about 1.88. We used to be up to about 2.51 10 years ago or so, but now we're down to 1.88. which is far below the sub-replacement fertility rate, which is really talking about extinction. But, as I said, that those laws, Allah has given the human being the power to overcome the laws. He has given the power to the human being to use his intellect, to use his knowledge and his wisdom to overcome the laws. This is why we can get out of the law of gravity. The law of gravity is like so many pounds of pressure per square inch, and we are able to overcome that. The average person is walking on the earth. He's not flying off. He can't jump but so high. I think the highest a human being can jump without the agency of some artificial means is about 8 feet. They can jump over something 8 feet high and land on the other side of it without knocking it over. That's the highest. That's a world record. See, so we can only, the best of us, the best of all of us, can only jump 8 feet. That tells us that the law of gravity is a powerful law. It's a powerful law because it keeps things on earth to the degree that you just can't float away like that. And a mist can do that because it's lighter than that gravitational pull. But man has been given the power to overcome that, and the power is in his knowledge. The freedom, the intellectual freedom or the mental freedom that the human being has conditioned the human being to believe he can fly. And over time, we've learned to do that, generation after generation. We've learned to fly from Charlotte, North Carolina to New York City or to California, all across the world. And we even have those who are flying to the moon. Now you're talking about visiting Mars and sending probes out into space. So man has overcome the law of gravity. Now we as a community, we as a culture, we still have that same power within us, not just us. I'm saying that it's just privy to us, but that not just us. Every culture has this power to overcome the law of sub-replacement fertility rate if we apply ourselves. If we tend to do what you profess and with your organization in terms of marriage, in terms of coming together as a husband and wives and making children and building families, if we take that position, then, of course, we would beat this sub-replacement fertility rate. I'm going to probably surprise some of you, maybe not some of you, but the world is under the same pressure. Much of the world is under the same pressure because in the last 10 years or so, the European American and the European from Europe, the Germans and so forth and so on, have been encouraging women not to have children. They've been encouraging women to look at their careers, to become career first before you have children. They've been encouraging women to have one child, and not just aimed at the African-American, but this is aimed at the women because they can make more money if they have the women into the market rather than out of the market. If they had the woman into the market, they can make more money off the woman's presence in the market. But it has caused the European people to look at the sub-replacement fertility rate as a situation that's going to cause them to become, maybe not extinct, but become less of a power. And what they're looking at are other countries who are not suffering from that degree, and they have to do something to adjust to that. Now, the Chinese saw that rate. The Chinese, you remember, those of you who keep up on the news, you know the Chinese, at one time, they was paying their people not to have children because they were so populated. They wanted their families to have maybe one child, and they would pay them if they did. Now they're suffering from the sub-replacement fertility rate. So the government in China has reversed their thinking. Now the government in China is paying families, paying women to have babies, to have more babies. They pay for two babies and three if they can get more. This is what they're doing because they recognize the sub-replacement fertility rate will affect all human beings. And the people who are left on the earth in terms of numbers are going to be people who are going to be in terms of in control. And that surprise I was going to mention, but some of you were not surprised at it, but the Jewish population was falling like the African-American population. But they denounced out of Israel that they had put on the brakes of sub-replacement fertility rate. Now they're up to almost 3%. They're up to 2.13% over the sub-replacement fertility rate, and they're growing. And you will see this in those of you who are around communities where the Jewish population is. You see how they promote this idea of children. They promote this idea of marriage. They promote this idea of family by parading through the neighborhoods and showing the people that they are believers in this becoming more fertile and becoming a people who can going to be here when the chips are down, when the dust settles, who's going to be around you? You see, and this is what this is all about today, and this is what the European is looking at. If the African Americans are not here, that's more the European have the share of the wealth of the earth, and that's what the real competition is about. The competition is about the material gain of what you can get from this earth, and European American is realizing that without 42 million. African Americans, if we got down to 1 million, we would have no problem. 10 million, we have no problem. Like the Native American, they're down to a couple million around the whole globe, just about. And there was a 65 million of them in America alone when the European first got here. And now they're of no consequence at all in terms of being a competitor for wealth and a competitor for the things, the goods of the earth. They're not in the game. But the African American is. And this is where Majid was right on, because there is a struggle for material wealth. There is a struggle for material wealth on the planet for all people, not just African Americans and not just Europeans, all the people, because they know you have to drink water to survive. You have to eat food to survive. And all that stems around an economy building up in that society. And the more the economy builds up in that society, the better lifestyle they would have, the better life they would have with the McConaughey, as your brother mentioned about the movies, making the movies. They're making money off these programs and ideas and concepts because they're using this technique to galvanize the people in a way that they can make a good living off the people and they can build life off the people. And I know I may be making it sound a little grim and maybe with a little twist of irony in it, but the man's progress is based on this too. That's a good thing. See, but our progress is based on that. It's not that it's all bad and people just treat people bad just to get rich. That's not the message. The message is this is how cultures survive. This is how cultures develop and determine a better lifestyle for themselves because they look at those aspects that they have to gain. And as you know, I have much of this in my books. I've written 4 books myself, and one, The Success is Automatic, Unleash the Power of Your Industrious Nature and Achieve Your Dream, and the other is The River of Gold, talking about the African-American people. When they between 1896 and 1932, they realized that they had done that what they call segregation, that period of segregation. The European called the Jim Crow time, but I dubbed it in my book. Jim Crow was dead on arrival because what they did, they forced the African American people to go to themselves, and when they went to themselves, they built Black Wall Street. Tulsa, Oklahoma. They built Black Wall Streets in Durham, North Carolina, Richmond, Virginia, D.C., out in California, Seattle, Washington. Everywhere the African Americans were, and there in Chicago where Brother Majid is, and they had the Black Metropolis in Chicago. And the Black Metropolis was so powerful during that particular time, they called it a city within a city. So that idea that forcing the African-American people to come together was great for the African-American people, but not so good for the European because now we're becoming his greatest competitor for the wealth and goods of the earth. And that's when they came with this concept and idea about social integration because they wanted to do everything and take the African-American people down the same road that they took the Native American in down when they begin to cause the Native American people to become extinct. We're on the same path. We're on the same road. They developed this school system for the Native American. They wouldn't allow the Native American to have their own school system. They forced them to come to their schools where they could teach them. They wouldn't let them speak their languages. And in fact, they made them burn their clothes. That's what they did to the Native American to get them out of that cultural idea so their culture would die and the people would die along with it. And this is the same process they're using against the African American people today. But we have many intelligent African people now. I think we see it, and we're not sure what to do about it. But I think we're starting to come alive. We're starting to think. And you heard the solutions by Brother Majid. What he has a solution, and some others. That's a very wise and smart African American, not just Muslim now. There's some of them are black Israelites. Some of them are Christian. They're wise. It's just a matter of learning to collaborate so we can get the best from the individuality that Allah has created in each of us so we can get the most out of it. And then our situation probably would look a lot rosier once we learn to collaborate, once we learn to think about the things of the future, how we can become a people for the future and a people that are and really build generational wealth. And we need to do all those things that, in fact, once the African-Americans start doing those things that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad cited, he saw that himself. He saw that in an operation. That time of period that I just spoke about, 1896 to 1932, well, he was born during that period. He saw in his own, without his own eyes, in his own behavior, how African-American people were making advances. African-American people had their own farm system, their own stores and things of that nature. He saw that as a child. And he got up and got an opportunity to express it to other African-Americans who might not have seen that, who lived in the urban area so long, they might not have seen that and might not have understood the power the African-American people had. So he came with the thinking of do for self. Do for self because he knew it worked. He saw it in action. And he believed that we did it as a people, we would have the same success that the African Americans was having during what they call the Jim Crow era or segregation. It was a tremendous time. We invented the car in 1915. Patterson was making cars the same time Henry Ford was making cars. See, we were doing a lot of things. See, so, but that's the key to what we're looking at and what we and I definitely agree with what Brother Majid is saying. We have to do something. We can't just sit by and think the European American is going to save us. We can't be looking up in the sky and looking for something to come down and save us, and especially no European. And we have to get out of that thinking that we can't do for ourselves. And we have to wait for somebody to do something for ourselves, like Sister Khalila, like you mentioned, education. We really have to start educating ourselves. If we don't start educating ourselves, there's no way we can get out of the situation that right down the line, no way we can avoid this catastrophe running head on in a collision to extinction if we don't start educating ourselves. You see, the Jewish population, they got their own schools. Every population that wishes to make it into the future, they have their own school system because they know you have to educate your people in terms of culturally in order for them to survive. And that's a big, big, big issue with us as a people. And it needs to be something we must look at very, very, very closely and do something about. And I'm not sure about something that Brother Majid said. We may not see that eye to eye, but I think there's some validity to it, that the imams are responsible for it, and we should rest on them. I don't think we should rest on the imams coming to our rescue. I think they're in the race for themselves, too. I think they have to do for themselves. I think we should, what Majid said, we need to look at the business people, look at the organizers, people who do those things to work it out, to do the psychologists, the doctors, and so forth we have within our community. They need to come forth and do this hard, hard work, which is going to be very, very beneficial, which is going to be tremendously beneficial for our people that they do that work. But that's about all I had to say in regards to that. And I thought it was a interesting and very meaningful presentation that Brother Majeed gave. And I was glad to hear his voice again and hear him still kicking. he said, I can't run as fast, jump as high, but I'm still moving.
Yes, you're still on the case, brother.
Alhamdulillah.
All right, so thank you so much for that great, great explanation of what your aspirations are in making the world into a better place for all people and how we can use those strategies that you're speaking about in your books to begin. So we're going mm-hmm. to give you both an opportunity to give make sure that you give your contact information. We want to know how we can support you here on Narrative Aspirations. When we aspire, mm-hmm. we go higher. We also want our listening audience to know that this is the time, if they have any questions or comments, to press 1 to come into the queue, ask those questions. We're going to be wrapping it up and going on to our beloved Imam W.D. Muhammad, Rahim Allah Alay, listening to one of these recordings that we have here in the studio. And we hope that it resonates well with you. For the recordings, we do not do question and answer because it's a button that I push and it plays until the time is up. And so with that said, if you will, and if I stop it, it'll start over again. And so if you will, if you have any questions about tonight's broadcast or any comments about Imam W.D. Muhammad, Rahim Allah Alay, just give us an email and title it Narrative Aspirations, Imam Muhammad's Recordings, or any information that you heard from Brother Cornelius Majeed and Imam Shahid Abdullah or myself, Sister Khalida Akbar, and make the comment or question and give us the information to get back with you if that's your wish. If you want us to respond to you, please give us some contact information. If you're leaving a question or a comment or just in general a statement, that's fine too. And so we hope that you learned something tonight and that you can be inspired through Narrative Aspirations. Join us each and every Wednesday night, inshallah, from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as we highlight the people in our community who use their God-given talents to help remake the world into a better place for all people. All right, and then you can connect online at am360.org, and you can always go back and re-listen and share this blog talk, not just Narrative Aspirations, but any of our broadcast, am360.org. Go to podcast and click on anything that you may have missed, and be sure that you will be well pleased. You can also join us live in the studio, like many of you are doing, by dialing 515-605-9891 or 425-292-4253. Or you can email us at info@cwsc.us. Again, info@cwsc.us. Tweet us, for those who like to tweet. It is tweet at CWS in all caps and then HURAA in small. So that's tweet at CWS caps, lowercase HURAA. That's CW Shura. Like us on Facebook. We are the community-wide Shura Conference. Visit our parent company, Community Wide Shura Conference Incorporated, at cwsc.us. Or you can just call us and leave a listener comment by dialing 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Callers, keep in mind when you dial that number, it's just going to beep, and you can start talking and hang up when you're done. It's like an old-fashioned answering service, and it actually doesn't say anything. So you dial it, it picks up, it beeps, and you go and just hang up. And we will get that. So thank you so much for joining us, Imam Shahid Abdullah. We're going to give you an opportunity to close us out. But first we're going to ask Brother Cornelius Majeed to go ahead and give us an overview of, number one, his main ideas tonight, and also how we can reach him and how we can support him, and also how to access his books and the different platforms that he has to offer. Inshallah. Assalamu alaikum. Imam.
Alaykum as-salam.
And Brother Shahid Abdullah. And Brother Cornelius.
You can,
go ahead.
Yeah, you can email me if you're interested in getting a download of the book or a copy of the book. You can send email to MajidCornelius@gmail.com. That's my name backwards. And the thing that I'm doing to try and get this thing on the road is just trying to come to the imams and let them know that we need to go on to that third resurrection now. We got to get some money. Allah blessed us mentally and spiritually. So now we need to complete those stages the imam spoke of, the three stages. We need that material stage now, and then we'll be on our way. So that's basically all I can say to sum up the book is that, you know, our leader said there's three stages of development, three stages of growth, and three stages of completion. And we done had two of those stages, and we need to have that last one. But once again, you can order the book. You can download or what have you. Take this down. My name backwards, MajidCornelius@gmail.com. Just email me and let me know what you want to do. Do you want to download or do you want a copy of any of the books that I have? I'll make them available to you once you email. And I thank Khalilah for blessing me to be here in the audience. It's been great. I love it. I'm going to be a participant here on out. I've been kind of busy writing these movies and plays, but I'm gonna take some time to participate in this program because I think it's number one for our community.
Alhamdulillah, we are so excited that you are writing those movies and plays, and we would like to see you on the big screen and you promoting health and wellness, spiritual, mental, and financial wellness, inshallah. We want a balanced community.
I'm going to build New Africa, sister. The goal is to build New Africa with the proceeds. I'm going to build New Africa with the proceeds.
Yes, sir. All right, so Brother Majid, could you please spell out your name for the people who are going to use your email address, please?
Okay, it's backwards. M-A-J-I-E-D.
Your first and last name.
And yes, I'm gonna do the. It's backwards. The first you know I'm gonna spell it backwards, but it's Cornelius Majid, but I'm gonna spell Majid Cornelius. However you want to do it, but it's okay. C O R N E L I U S A J I E D. Now turn that around and put @gmail.com. MajidCornelius@gmail.com. And just tell me what you want to do, and we'll take it from there.
Alhamdulillah. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. And can you give us a motto or a dua that you use frequently? And then we'll have Imam Shahid Abdullah close us out, inshallah.
I love the one that says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Kul wa'alo ahad, Allahu samad. Lam yalad wa lam yulad wa lam yakul lahu kufuwan ahad. That's my favorite.
I mean, thank you so much for joining us, and inshallah we'll have you back. Yes. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum
as-salam. Imam Shahid Abdullah. Thank you.
Yes. And thank you very much, Sister Khalilah. It's always a pleasure. And if those who don't know how to get in touch with me, all my books are on Amazon. You can just go and put my name in, Shahid, S-H-A-H-I-D, Abdullah, A-B-D-U-L-L-A-H, and you see the list of the books. And you can put the books in. One, the first one is Success is Automatic, and second is River of Gold, and the third is Spirit of Allah, and the fourth is Uncovering the Schemes, Preventing the Evolution of the African-American Culture. You can put any of those books in, but to get the complete knowledge collection, you have to contact me directly. Because that includes the book called The Negro Market. That's the book that talks about that time between 1896 and 1932, how well the African-American people were doing during that particular time. That book was hidden from the public for over 70-something years. and I was blessed to get hold of it, blessed to get it through a family member, and it, I'm producing it for everybody to see it, read it, and see for yourself what a great people we are and we have been. That book will come in the knowledge collection. Now, you get that, you contact me directly, either by phone at 908-296-2558. That's 908-296-2558. Or you can email me at Shahid, S-H-A-H-I-D, underscore, Abdullah, A-B-D-U-L-L-A-H, 2000 at yahoo.com. And, or you can email me. Go, my website is being put up now. It's called the Bill of New Africa, USA. You can go to that website. You'll be able to get all the books there, too. So thank you all again. Did you want me to close out, sister, or you want something else?
Yes, you can go ahead and close us out, and so we can go ahead and join.
Rabin Atina Fedunia Asanatan, Akirati Asanatan, Walking Ada Banari. Our Lord, give us the best of this world and of the hereafter, and protect us from the fire. Amen.
Amen. Assalamu alaikum. Rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Dapreeta Hadi, Director of the MCNRD Model Community National Resource Directory, reminding volunteers of our upcoming MCNRD Social Connect Conference every last Sunday of the month, 1 o'clock p.m. to 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We look forward to your participation, so please check your email for conference call information. Thank you so kindly. Assalamu alaikum.
Yeah, beautiful thing going.
Mm-hmm.
Peace be with you and welcome to Positive Solutions to Critical Issues, hosted by yours truly, Dr. Jamal Rashid and Instructor Henry Hasid. This program is sociologically as well as psychologically inclined, with Fitzer as its base. We examine the root seed to multiple effects that impact our holistic daily lives. So tune in each and every Thursday morning from 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. Thank you and have a pleasant day.
We praise God, and we witness that He is one and cares about all of us, all people, all nations, all the worlds. And we witness that the final revelation, the Quran, is revealed to Muhammad, and he's a messenger to all the people of the earth, and he's a mercy to all people and a mercy to all the world. We appreciate this opportunity to address the radio audience and to be here on this first Sunday of the year and this first day of the year. And I wish all of you all a happy new year and a very prosperous new year. We hope that the year we are in now will be better than the year that just went out. And I believe it will be for all of us. We're addressing the need for reform. The future that we are facing is going to bring about more demand for reform, more support for reform. Reform for public education in the United States of America, but also reform for almost everything that we have been supported by, everything almost that we have been supported by. This is a new world we're living in. It's a new time and a new world. The world was once having one-sidedness, just seeing one way, and was not respecting the whole people or the whole population of this planet Earth. It was moving very selfishly in the direction of what it wanted and ignoring justice. Before 1945, the world had no, quote, institution, end quote, or legal organization whereby a nation threatened by another nation could take its complaints and be heard. A Catholic peace-building movement publishes a magazine titled Living City. One of this featured articles says, after 60 years, the United Nations will be facing a demand for more serious reform. Public education in the United States, the natural environment, respecting the natural environment for the good of the environment itself, but also to save human life on this planet, shrinking fuel supplies, poverty and starvation, are all on the world scene and on the agenda of conscious nations. At home in our big and small cities, reform is becoming the more pressing issue. Feeling and perception also needs reforming. How we feel about things and how we perceive or understand things. Communities must support efforts to reform popular thinking and attitudes. Emotions are too high. Human intelligence will be approached in the future more directly. People will be demanded to use their brains more and respect intelligence and respect intelligent behavior. As the world tries to keep its old habit of dancing and singing troubles away, the world gets more messy. Morals become more confused and human abuses more horrifying. Think of human bodies as a human body. Think of the human body that it is a vehicle, you know, like an automobile, a truck, or whatever, a motor vehicle. Think of the human body as a motor vehicle. Now, I know when I was young, I wanted to drive, long before I was of age to drive. I used to ride in the car with senior or older brothers in the temple who had cars, to call temple back then, the place of worship. And I'd sit there and I'd be imagining myself under the wheel. And my father, sometimes, occasionally, he would try to take us in his car, and I was there imagining myself under the wheel. I got the opportunity to drive a truck long before I was of age. This brother asked me, I was about 14 years old, he said, would you like to go with me and make some extra money? I said, yes. So I went with him. He had a nice truck, like maybe a two-ton truck. And that's the way I remember it. I think, looking at it with my eyes now, I think it's probably about 2.5 ton maybe. And he would load it, overload it, with what we call junk. And he would take the junk to the junkyard. And he would sell glass. He'd sell metal he'd pick up. And he would pick up a lot of paper and cardboard. He would sell that and rags, old rags. And once we were driving along, I think it was 43rd Street, and he said, would you like to try it? I said, yes. So he pulled over and stopped, and I got under the wheel. And believe me, I drove well the first time under the wheel because I had been driving all the time, imagining myself in the driver's seat all the time. So it wasn't difficult. I just followed what I was observing. I did the same thing, and I had to get used to everything. But I even measured spaces, you know. While the other driver was driving, I would imagine the space he could get through and the spaces he could not get through. So I drove that truck. And seeing all these vehicles now on the road, and some of the people that's in them, they passed, they got their license. But really, they shouldn't be behind the wheel. Some of them look like they're trying to hit me, and I'm dodging them. It looks like they're trying to follow me to hit me. I don't know. This is really a unconscious world, a world that's got a spirit controlling it. Most of the people are controlled by a spirit that's not intelligent. It's not the spirit that came from good parents. It's not the spirit that came from good teaching, education. No, it's not the spirit that comes from the individual's good thinking. It's another spirit, and that spirit is really causing us a lot. So we're going to have to reform our spirit. We have to reform our spirit, and we can reform our spirit. All you have to do is reform the way you think. Reform the way you think, and everything will change for the better. As the Bible says, and as the philosopher said before the Bible had it, a philosopher said, as a man thinketh, so is he. And the Bible says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And the Quran says, think, for surely thinking will profit you. Yes, think. And W.E.B. Du Bois says, our political leader, and well, really, he started the NAACP. He was the one to start what we call now the NAACP. He said, our people will progress in the measure that we are willing to teach our children to think. Think! I remember parents correcting us. You better use your head. You better think. They would insist that we think. Behavior without thought is blind behavior. And a lot of good habit is acceptable, but crazy habit is not. Imagine now, your car or a truck, a motor vehicle, and you're going down the street, flying down the street at the speed limit or above. You have no brakes. Your steering doesn't work. You grab the wheel and it doesn't work. It won't turn your left or right. No brakes and no steering. You wouldn't drive a vehicle like that. But many of us live like that. Right. Right. No brakes. no steering. In fact, when we see the danger, instead of turning left to get out of the way of it, we persist in just going headlong the same way. So we are having a spirit and a behavior that's reckless, at-risk behavior, terribly at-risk behavior. We need to reform it, and we got to reform it. We don't have homes anymore, the majority of us, that represent intelligent guidance for us. And it's not because it's not wanted in those homes. It's because the world scene, and for most of us, I'm speaking of right now, in these towns and cities that I mentioned earlier, the world scene is a street scene. The behavior in the streets, the attitudes in the streets, the things that attract your attention, you who are in the streets, the songs you listen to, the music you like, the movies you like. And by the way, we need to reform our mind so that our minds will come up from being so low down. It's a shame that I can't find hardly a decent movie in some of these African-American neighborhoods, some of the black neighborhoods. I can't find a decent movie. And I got really fed up, and I was getting a little angry. I said, I'm going to approach the management. And something told me, no, don't bother the management. The management is only showing what they will support. And I recall watching a nice movie on the weekend. Nice movie. Hardly nobody there watching it but me and my little son, my son, and maybe two or three other people. And I recall being alone just with my son and whoever was with us. Sometimes I have someone else with us. Now my wife is with us when we go half the time that we go. She's not a habitual movie goer like we are. My son and I, we don't know anything to do. When we get off of work, we say, oh, a movie. Yeah. A restaurant and a movie. That's it. So we're watching this movie and it comes to my mind, ain't nobody here. And after it happened several times that we are watching a nice, great, high-class movie, nobody there but us, then it registered on my mind. Our people don't support movies like this. The average one in these African-American neighborhoods, they don't support class. They don't support culture. They don't support quality. All they want to see is violence and sex. Violence and sex. They get the big crowds, the movies that have a lot of violence and a lot of sex. They get the big crowds. They're decent movies that will feed your mind and help you get your life straight or help you keep your life straight. Nobody wants to see those.
There it is.
Well, I've given up really appealing to those people of minds like that, whether young or old, whether it's our youngsters, our teenagers, or old. My address to you on this day and every day I speak every first Sunday on live broadcast or the radio broadcast. My interest is reaching those who care about life, not those who have given up on it. Those who care about life, because they can't help themselves and they can't help you. If they could help themselves, they wouldn't be in that condition. And if we could help them, they'd be here listening to us. They have no interest in what we are saying. They have no less interest in anything but what got them, what's holding them. Vulgarity, violence, love for vulgarity, and love for crime. Crime. That's a crime to treat yourself that way. It's a crime to treat your life the way you treat your life. And we want the conscious ones that are in our hearing range, in the radio audience and here at this facility, we want the conscious ones to register more the hurt on society, the hurt on human life. Think about it more and register it more so you will do more about it. They can't help themselves. Spiritually, they're dead.
Right. The
morally, they're dead.
Right.
So how can you raise the dead if they insist upon living in the graveyard? And the big cities, they make more and more room for you. If you want to live in the graveyard, they'll turn over some more land to you to increase the area for the dead. Oh, yeah. They ain't running out of no space when it comes to accommodating the dead. You want to die and go 6 feet under, they're ready for you. Got plenty of land, more. If your graveyard in your area is filling up, they got plenty of land available. They'll accommodate you if you want to go down in the grave. The grave of moral decay, moral rot. We have to reform the behavior. We can save those who are conscious. If the best help that a conscious person needs and the help that helps them the most is just to know that there's somebody else conscious. And we want you out there in the radio audience that are conscious, still alive morally, still respect things of importance, still care about human life and human suffering. We want you to know that we are alive with you, and we want us all to be together. Let us be together, one spirit. God has made us one spirit, and God has made us one life, human life and human spirit. And if you are in human life and like to remain human, you have human spirit.
That's right.
So we are one and the same. And I'm thankful to God, as we say thankful to Allah, yes. Muslims say thankful to Allah, that we still have conscious people on this earth who will not give in to the pressure to go 6 feet under. And there are plenty of pressure out there to go 6 feet under.
Right.
Plenty of it. Not much help to keep your life in a good condition, but a lot of help if you want to destroy your life. you know, I was thinking on the subject of reform, an old song, words from an old song came to my mind. It goes like this. I'm going to change the way I walk. I'm going to change the way I talk.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, I said to myself, whoever wrote that song, it put something together. Because walking and talking are developments that come almost at the same time in the life of human beings, walking and talking. Usually the child that's walking can talk a little bit too. And if they're talking, usually he's walking too. So walking and talking like twins, you know, in the developmental progress of human life. They come around the same time, walking and talking. And this world, with its bad influences, when I say this world, I mean the corrupt world, the unconscious world, or I should say maybe the satanic world, that not out to help human life, but out just to exploit human life, to profit, to make money at the risk of human life. That world reaches us with its influences, And it changes the way we think. First, it changes the way we think. Then it changes the way we feel. Because if the way you think changes, then you're open to feel differently too. So it changes first the way we think, then it changes the way we feel, then it changes the way we behave.
Yes.
And when the thinking changes, it's expressed in the language. The talk changes. And you know, this, I don't know how this world managed to be so quick. I know I read in the Bible that says one beast has eyes all over him. And I took that to mean spies. That bad society beast has spies everywhere. And mix among them. And let me know what's happening, what the mood changes are. Let me know what the trends are. Or what you see developing. So they'll find a youngster. They'll find a youngster walking down the street. And he has went off from the norm. He's left the old behavior. And he's indicating that he got another spirit in him and a different behavior. Mm-hmm. He'd be wearing his clothes hanging off his butt. And they say, okay, there are a lot of them out there like him, or they're ready to be like him. Let's put him on TV.
Yeah, that's right. Come on.
And we're gonna sell a lot of baggy clothes hanging off the butt.
That's right.
Now, why am I saying this to you out there? Because I believe there's some good conscious ones out there that's going around with your clothes hanging off your butt.
Right.
That tells the world that cares nothing about human life, cares more about money than anything, that tells that commercial mind in the world that you are one of them.
Right.
Or you are one of their customers, potential or buying already. So let us be conscious and let us fight the world that takes us down and support the world that lifts life up. That's what we have to do. And this is an effort to reform the way you think. And as I said, if we can reform the way you think, I should say we think, we can reform the way we behave. Because your thinking, your behavior doesn't change until your thinking changes. I'm sure you recall being at home with your parents and some child, member of the family, sometimes a distant one, a close one, or an outsider may be in the house. Because our parents, some of them, they don't care who's in the house. If you behave in an unconscious way, if you display ignorance and vulgar behavior, they'll correct you. They don't care who you are. They say, hey, this is my house.
That's right.
And they are correct. So they would see someone behaving that way, and they would say, what's gotten into your mind?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what they would say?
Yes, sir.
What's gotten into your mind?
Right.
Now, they weren't no psychologists, but they knew, common sense told them, if you're behaving differently, something has gotten into your mind. So a lot of us, we think, oh, I know they bad, but you got to love them. Love them. Come on, hon. I love you anyway, honey. Come on, give me a hug. You should be giving the right cross. Right cross. Muhammad Ali or whoever the popular fighter is now. Right cross. Knock them flat on their back. And that'll be love. But saying, come and give me a hug, that's saying, I like you just as you are. you don't have to change for me. You ain't bothering me with your bad behavior. I like you just as you are. No, we don't. That's not like, that's not love. That's abuse. You're abusing them with that kind of treatment. Yes. And, you know, if you're conscious, you benefit from everything good. And when you're unconscious, morally, spiritually, when you're unconscious, you are susceptible, you are vulnerable, you're open to everything bad. You lose everything. So we are a people who value human life. Your bad behavior hurts our feelings. The way you treat yourselves pains us right in our hearts. But we are not going to go to the grave with you.
There it is. Right.
We're going to work with the best of us.
All right, bro.
And hope that one day our influence in our areas where we live, in our neighborhoods, will be bigger than the influence of those who don't care about anything but money.
Right.
Or will push everything, every other important issue off the desk if it hurts their money. They just want to keep the money coming, big. And they are responsible for all the misery we are seeing now.
Right.
Not only in the streets, but in our homes. They are responsible.
Right.
This much damage could not be done to us if it was not for television.
There it is. Right.
Television now brings what's happening from all over the world right into your living room. And you can't be there all the time. You don't know what your children are watching and what they're not watching.
That's right.
So you got corruption having free access, free entry, and that's bad. And what are you going to do? You can't go crazy. I know I won't. I insist upon being sane and reasonable. You can't go crazy and say, "Hey, I'll beat you to death if you keep watching that." No, you can't do that. So they insist that they're going to watch that stuff, and they're teenagers, they're going to school. You can't beat them to death. You can just keep talking to them and try to reason with them. That's all you can do. And some of us, we do that and we lose them. They go out of our house. Pretty soon they don't want to stay with us because we irritate them. So they want to stay with somebody else. So they leave us and go stay with somebody else. And pretty soon we find out that they have left the life. The good life.
Right.
And they have joined those who waste life.
Right.
Destroy life. But we only can do our best and have faith that eventually good wins out.
Yes.
Eventually God takes over.
Yes.
We can only go so far with Satan. And after a while God will say, "I will take charge of this matter." And then God brings his judgment. And the whole world begins to change.
There it is.
People on high that tolerated their abuse of freedom. Freedom to make money at any cost. Freedom to take over the culture. And make it nothing but a culture for dollars. A culture to produce dollars. Yes? That's almost what our culture is now in the streets.
Right.
And on television. It's a culture to produce dollars.
Right.
But there come a time eventually that the high-ups in government, the high-ups in church, and church life, and for us, religion, our Muslim life, the high up get fed up too. God put in them the spirit. Say, "Hey, this has gone too far."
That's right. All right, bro.
It has to be checked.
Yes.
So high up in religion, in Christianity, I mean world Christianity, Christianity not just here in America, Christianity in Europe, Christianity everywhere, the high ups, they meet and they say, hey, something got to be done about this. It's got to be checked. It's gone too far. And they express themselves and high ups in government hear of their concern. And those that have the same fear and the same concern in high places in government, they meet with those of the religious establishment.
Right.
Now, I'm talking as though this is something that could happen.
Yeah, come on.
Or something that has happened.
Yes.
But really, what I'm viewing in my mind right now is what's happening at this particular time. So don't think that everything is lost. Mm-hmm. No. We have people in high government positions and people in high religious positions, church positions, mosque positions, synagogue positions. We have people in high places with influence and with money.
That's right.
And power.
Yes.
We have people who have looked at this ugly scene, this ugly life scene, and the public just going to the graveyard.
Yeah. Right.
And they've said, let them go on their own. But we have to stop those who are profiting on their bad behavior. So privileges that have been given, immoral money makers, is being taken away from them.
Right.
And it won't be long. I think you can see the sign of it in the movie theaters now. You're getting movies that's coming out that's addressing moral issues.
Yes.
More movies are coming out now that address moral issues. More movies that are coming out now that address the forces of good and evil.
Yes.
How they are in conflict and in battle with each other.
Yes.
More movies are coming out that tells us that the influence of those persons or people in high places are reaching even the industry, the movie industry. Mm-hmm. We don't see it much or hear it much in the record business, the recording industry for records and songs and stuff like that, music. We don't see it much, but it's there. It's coming. It's growing there too. And pretty soon, the rapper, don't you know we have good rappers? They're good rappers. There are plenty of good rappers. But you don't see that, they didn't see them in that period. They're still on us, but it's going away. It's a thing of the past.
Right.
That spirit when the vulgar guy is welcome.
Right.
The nasty mouth guy is welcome.
Right.
And the clean mouth guy, we don't want you.
Right.
There's nothing for you to do. Why don't you go back and get it together again? You know? Nothing for him. And he really got what helps. He got medicine and healing and sweet stuff and good stuff. And the other guy got poison. That's all he got, poison. Drugs in the form of music and song. That's what he got. The time is changing. It's time for reform. Now, you who are Muslims in the audience and remember the days of the Nation of Islam under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and there are many of you who never became Muslims, but you appreciated the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's work for the black people.
Yes, right.
Or for the African Americans. Elijah Muhammad, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, if I would describe him in just one statement, I would say he was a man who wanted to dignify the life of his people.
Right. All right.
And that kind of work, when you look at the whole life and you want to make it more respectful, more respectable, and more respectful, you are looking at it with the eyes of a reformer. You want to reform the life. You remember Carter G. Woodson?
Yes, sir.
We celebrate him every February, Black History Month.
That's right.
He wrote a book challenging us to take on the responsibility ourselves for educating our children. And he said it, he took the position that the way we were being educated in the public system was really miseducation. Miseducation. And he was correct. It has changed a lot since his time. A lot. In fact, it's completely new scene. It's not the same scene that Carter G. Woodson was looking at. But it still has a long ways to go yet. It still needs more reforming. And I'm not saying this. It's the educators and the conscious teachers and also higher education and the institutions of higher education. They are saying it also that we have to reform our system of education.
Right.
The textbooks. They still need more correction and more corrections and are reforming. We need to form the way they are composed or the way the writers perceive knowledge and education.
Mm-hmm.
So the time is here and it's going to bring about a good change for the better.
Yes.
And I'm optimistic. I see a good future coming. I think the sickness has reached its course. And a healing time is here. Yes, the healing time is here. And life is going to be beautiful. Also, I want to say to the young people here in the audience that we have to reform the way we see old people.
Yes.
You know, human progress on this earth has been made more and better because the old folks deposited what they had of value from their learning and experiences into the ears and heads of the young. And during that period of time, behind us, a long ways behind us, some of us still do it, but very few. During that period of time, youngsters didn't look at old people and say, oh, I have nothing to do with them, and they have nothing to do with me. No. They felt a strong bond. Child and adult. A strong bond. They felt a dependency.
Right.
And even the rebellious ones, those that were of bad behavior, they had some respect for elders.
Right.
Some respect for senior citizens. Some respect for old folks. But all that was destroyed too with this new popular culture that took over. Yes? All that was lost. Also, adults, you have to reform the way you see the young people.
Right.
I hear them saying, oh, well, you know, they just young. And they don't add, they don't know. You stop doing that. But I remember the time when you said both. Oh, they just young. They don't know. They have learned so much, you don't say they don't know anymore. You know, they know more than every one of us, that's for sure. Especially about this world and life out there. Yes. But we have to change the way we look. We have to change and reform. Change, reform, same. We have to reform the way we look at the youngsters. We shouldn't look at them and say, oh, they're young, and they're just caught up in that young life, and I hope they survive it, you know. You can't look at them like that. You got to look at them and say, if all of them go bad, we all are going to become extinct.
That's it. All right.
Because our future is in our children. And the good life and good spirit that God put in human life, human nature, had us wanting to deposit the best of ourselves as we see ourselves getting more and more away from the energetic life, getting near to retirement. An urge came over us to share with our children, with the young, what we got, so that they will have more to work with for their future.
That's right. Yes, sir.
So we have to start looking at them like that again. We have to look at our children, our grandchildren. The Imam Daniel Kareem, Rafa, I'm sorry, he mentioned that I'm a grandfather. Rafa, I'm a great-grandfather. I got great-grandchildren. Yeah. And you see how it's supposed to go? Rafa?
Oh, yes, sir.
See, you have a father, then you have a grandfather, and then you have great-grandfather.
That's right.
See, it's supposed to get improved. Huh?
Yes, sir.
as the family line grows, you're supposed to be achieving more.
Yes,
sir. So now he produced me. He's a father. Now he produced me, and I produced a child from him,
yes.
from his line.
That's right.
Now he's a grandfather.
Right. Yeah.
Grand.
Yeah.
They try to make me feel uncomfortable. Say, hey, are you his grandfather? Talking about my young son. He's my son. You're his grandfather, aren't you? I say, yes, I'm his grandfather, and he's my grandson. Now, it's something when you become a great-granddaddy. Not only grand, you're great. So, appreciating life, that's where it all starts. Man, when God made him on this earth, he thought about himself and he thought about the world all about him. And he realized that there was more in the world than he could possibly use. There was just too much out there for him.
That's right, right.
He didn't have an appetite to use everything out there. So it made him wonder, why have I been put in a world like this to think and understand and be free to benefit from all of this beauty and all of this wealth and goods that's out here? And he started to reflect. And he came up with the idea that that couldn't have happened unless somebody was over it and cared about life.
Yes.
God.
Yes.
God. And we know that the ancient and those of medieval times and those around us here right now, those conscious people and teachers in religion, they say the first bond you should have is with God. And they say never break that bond.
Yes.
Form a tie, a relationship with God.
Yes.
And never break it.
Yes. Right.
That's the key to survival and good life on this planet Earth.
Yes.
So they told us that. And some of us, we don't want to hear anything. I was speaking once, and a young lady, she's not young anymore, but she was young then, She said, "Will you stop talking? I don't want to think. I don't want to think." Will you stop talking? I don't want to think. I don't want to think.
Yeah.
Now, she was a little bit conscious. Yes, she was.
Yes, sir.
Because she knew that I was making her think.
Oh, yeah.
Now they have regressed and gone so far away from intelligent human life,
yeah,
that they don't even, you don't bother. They don't even know you're talking. While you're talking, they're chewing, popping gum, or shaking the booty. They don't hear a thing you're saying. Can't hear a thing you're saying. Now that's dead, isn't it? Yeah, moral death. Spiritual and moral death. Yes, so another thing, you know, we should see our youngsters doing well and let everybody know they exist. Because those who want to use us and make money on our bad behavior, they are going to find the bad guy and the bad girl, and they're going to make sure that they are known. So what is that doing to our good youngsters? It's making them wonder. I don't do those things. And look at them hugging that bad guy. And they come here, honey. I still love you just like you are. Give me a hug. And the good guy looking at that, right? The good son or good friend looking at that, and saying, "Hey, I'm living right." And I don't get no attention.
Yeah.
And there he's notoriously bad. And he's getting all the attention. We have to reverse that. We have to stop that.
Right.
We have to start recognizing the good child.
Yeah.
Let the good child come up here and speak.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And that'll help the good child. And eventually it'll tell the bad child, "You got to get popular another way."
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them are bad just because they know it's popular to be bad.
Yeah.
We can change all that. Another area we need to look at is the way we see the city, the public facilities, the sidewalk outside the house, the curb in the streets in front of your house,
yes,
the lawn,
yes,
the walk you take to go to the store,
yes,
the walk you take through the park,
right,
the vehicle, the public vehicle you ride on,
yes,
the bus, the train, whatever. We have to perceive it differently.
Yes.
These things belong to all of us.
All right. Yes, sir.
You have the ghost of the plantation in you.
Mm.
The ghost of the plantation say, "This is a white man's."
Yeah, right. That's right.
It's a white man's street. He owns this street. White man owns this sidewalk.
Yeah.
Let me dirt it up. Let me trash it. Let me spit on it. Let me break out a window.
That's right.
Huh?
Yes, sir.
Become destructive, and we destroy our environment.
That's right.
We make ugly our own environment that we're living in.
That's right.
And an ugly environment makes your spirit ugly.
That's right.
It either kills the spirit or makes it ugly. Or it makes the spirit run out from that environment. It's going to affect you one way or the other. You're going to rebel against it and get away from it, which a lot of people do because they can afford to. They can afford to go out of that area. They go out of that area and move to a place where people are respecting intelligent behavior more, intelligent life more. Yes? But most of us don't move out. We don't have the money to move out. We stay in that area, and the area sometimes corrupt us. This environment will corrupt you. You're waking up in an ugly, filthy, trashy environment.
Come on.
It will corrupt you. Or it will take your spirit, your positive spirit, away from you. Mm-hmm. And you'll become unconscious, not caring anymore. You give up.
That's right.
I've heard some say, I can't handle all this. I had to throw up my hands. Now I see it and I just walk right by. Too much for them. It overwhelmed their spirit to stay straight.
That's right.
Yes. So you want a good spirit. You want to feel good inside. You want to feel like going to work. Make that environment pretty, pretty.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty up your environment.
Yes, sir. Come on.
Parents used to insist that a child keep the toys where the toys belong.
That's right. Come on.
Put your clothes up.
Yeah.
Put the dirty clothes where they go. Huh?
Yes, sir.
You used to insist upon these things. That's the natural spirit. That's the spirit in life, the original spirit in life that God created human beings with.
Yes.
The original spirit wants to see order and beauty.
Yes.
And life thrives on order and beauty. So we would get up and make up our beds, mm-hmm. put our shoes together.
Yes.
Right shoe with left shoe.
Yes.
Now we just throw them around.
That's right.
That burdens life.
Yes.
Now you have to go. You got to go. You got to go out to a date or go out to school or whatever. You got to find your shoe.
Yes.
You got a certain shoe, pair of shoes you want to wear.
Yes.
You got to find your shoe. You go crazy and start sweat little beads of sweat back on your head, trying to find your shoe.
Yes.
Now look how you're torching your life. Let us go back to the old. Let us reform.
Yes.
Reform means do it again.
Yes.
Form all over.
Yes.
Let us reform ourselves and put those shoes together, like right shoe with left shoe,
yes.
and put them where they're supposed to go, under the bed or wherever they're supposed to go, so they'll be ready for you when you need them. Do that.
Yes.
And everything else that you have to use.
Yes.
You know, we have a saying in religion. That even a child is going to be made accountable on Judgment Day.
That's right.
And God is going to ask the child, how did you treat the properties that your parents put in your possession?
All right.
So that means, how did you treat your clothes?
Mm-hmm.
How did you treat your shoes and socks, huh?
Yes, sir.
How did you treat your toys? How did you treat your books? Huh? Did you treat those things with respect? If you didn't, the judgment is going to fall even on a child.
Yes, sir. Come on.
Child going to fall in hellfire.
Go ahead.
I saw one fall already.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I did. Like a falling star.
Yes.
And down into the flames of consuming passions that take life to hell.
Right.
We appreciate you tuning in on us. We are happy on all occasions to address our audience, and we hope that in some way we benefit the living, and I think if the living are benefited, the dead will feel it. So we pray that more of the living will grow in the good life that God created us for and prosper in the good way. Don't be afraid to think big as long as you're thinking right.
Yes.
Don't think small.
Yes.
Because thinking is what profits human life. And thinking, God says, with Him in mind, is the most productive of all thinking or all thought. Thinking with Him in mind. So let us keep God in mind as we think ourselves into a better life and reform our attitudes, reform our understanding, our perception, our thinking, reform everything that's in the way of us having the life that we know is good for us. And may God keep us always and have a good year. We greet our radio audience with peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Allahu Akbar.
Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. That God is greater. Greater than anything imaginable. We're going to begin our second hour in just a couple of minutes. I'm going to take a couple of minutes breaks to get my paper, my thought, my notes together, and direction for this next hour that we're going to be spending. Do we have any announcements? A product. I think we have to make the audience aware of products. We have Dr. Diab. Maybe I should start it. Dr. Diab has worked with a soap, Salam soap, a bar soap. He worked with it for some time. He didn't give up patience. He didn't give up on it. And I didn't give up on him. He didn't give up on his product, and I didn't give up on him. So he finally has a product now that is great. It's a bar soap. It doesn't wash away or melt away. Some of this soap is made to keep you buying soap. Some of the bar soap is made so you hurry up. You got to come right back to the store and get another bar of soap. It just breaks down underwater. It suds too much. You don't need that much suds. Some of us think, well, if you want that suds, buy some suds. They sell suds too. But if you just want to wash your hands, then please get a bar of Dr. Diab soap because it's great now. He got it. It's a shea butter. It contains shea butter and nice bar, and you rub it on your hands. It rinses off real good. That's the kind of soap I want. You know, they have lotion and soap and all that. But that lotion, I know it's lotion, but to me, it's something that I need to rinse off. So I'm trying to rinse it off, and I'm spending too much time. I get in the shower and I use that soap that's got that stuff in it, and I shower and I feel slick. I don't want to feel like that. I know it's lotion or something, but I don't like that feeling. I think it's still something on me. I'm trying to get it off, trying to rinse it off. So this bar soap is not like that. It's very nice. You put it on your hand, rub it all over your hand. We're under the water, and almost instantly, it all rinses off. I love it. I love it. I have no money invested in it. I'm not saying this for money. I'm saying this, yes I am. I'm saying this so my brother can make money. Yeah. I'm promoting his soap so he will make money. And I might invest in it too. But right now that's not on my mind. My money ain't on my mind. It's his product that's on my mind. His product is excellent. So anybody who wants to try this soap, Salam bar soap. He just got it right. I tried it about a week ago. I got down to the last part of it, and it didn't slime. So it's right. So what he's going to sell from now on will be the improved formula that I assure you that it's great, it's good, it's excellent. It'll last you longer, so it'll cost you a little more, but it lasts much longer than the regular soap, the average bar of soap that you will buy. And the price is not too bad. It's a big bar of soap, and I think the price is around the retail price, I believe, is $4 or somewhere around there. It might be under $4. But it's not over that. It's a big bar of soap and very nice. Let's see what else we have. Also he has lotions. He got a new product. What is that product? It's a product for what is it called?
Shaving cream.
Oh yeah, that's a popular one. The shaving cream is going well. Those who use it, they're crazy about it. And I can tell you it's good because shea butter is a healer, skin healer. So if you get a nick, you can't get anything better, Harley, for that than the shea butter to keep your skin healed. It'll keep your skin healthy and well and healed and heal cuts, little cuts. But please don't cut yourself up. No, I'm talking the shea butter. There's another product. What's that product for runners? Athletes. Muscle relaxer. I hear that that's very good too. So he got several products. Anybody wanting to reach us with products, brother, the transportation, truck transportation man. All right, so we now continue the address on this day. And the topic or the subject is reform, the need to reform. It's continuing. But for the live audience here, and I have many of my students here who follow my language and understand it. Yes. Now, let's look at reform from Scripture. When we read the story of the creation of man, what we have to understand, students, is that it is not talking about the physical creation of man. And the way that we understand it, or the way that most people understand it, the way it's given to most people, that God made the first man from the earth or from clay and formed him and then breathed into him the spirit and he became a living creature or a living person. The way most of us understand that is kindergarten language. Kindergarten knowledge is not the way real educated people and religion understand it. But the public allowed to have these kindergarten pictures of reality because the public is not trusted with more knowledge. Do you know that the commercial world, TV, commercial TV, they compose their commercials to reach a 12-year-old mind. 12-year-old mind. They don't compose it higher than that unless they changed it, and I don't know about the change. But I've read documents on this. They compose the commercials to reach no higher than a 12-year-old mind. And you can just listen to many of them, and you can see they're designed for children. The commercials are designed for children. And that's where most of the public is, right there, in a child's condition or a child's state of mind. And so they designed it for that mind because they found out that they reach more of the public when they come that way. So the same goes for religion. Religion has been allowed to stay on a kindergarten level for the public, the masses of people. And pressure is on the religious establishment now to reform the way they preach, the way they perceive the public, the way they preach, and what they teach to bring about reform. And it's coming gradually. It's coming slowly. So we're going to see a new time when religion is going to come in a way that respects adult minds and adult intelligence.
Right.
It still will reach children, but it will not ignore or disrespect the intelligence of adult people. So there's no, animation That's what it looks sounds like to me, animation. A figure is made, a human figure is made out of clay of the earth, formed into shape, and their spirit goes into it, and it starts moving about as a human being like we are, you know. So that's like animation, you know. And what you have to be cautious of now is not to come to conclusions and judge this language with your intelligence or with your knowledge. If you don't have direct knowledge from learned people or from insight into these into this language, don't come to a hasty judgment and say, oh, that's fiction. That's not real. It's not. It's not fiction. It is real. It's not fiction. Metaphor, yes. But fiction, no. So metaphors are used. You who have taken college English 101, you know English 201, I think. Yes. 101 gives you the mechanics of language. I think it's the next one. Give you literature. If you've taken the higher course of English in high school, junior college or college, you should understand they taught you what a metaphor is, and you should understand what we're talking about. Literature, period. Not just religious literature. If you read a good novel, you have to know something to appreciate it and to get the best of that novel. You have to know that thing, energy, principles, devotion, trends, abstract concerns are put in concrete pictures. The concrete picture will not be a horse. In reality, a horse will be used to say spirit. The horse will be spirit, not a real horse. But in the language, on the surface, it says a horse. You see? You have a bad guy in the woods, and he's called Satyr, or Satyr. But he really won't be a person. He'll be a disposition of mind. A critical disposition of mind. It'll represent a person criticizing the world that he lives in. His mind, his critical mind, how he's criticizing the world he lives in. And usually, if it's satire, he's criticizing the politics, the way the government operates, etc. Satire. I think it's spelled S-A-T-Y-R. I'm not sure. I can't recall right now. It's been a long time since I've seen the word written or in print. And I don't use that kind of language, so I can't recall. But you can look it up in the dictionary, satire. And it wouldn't hurt those who are interested in understanding W.D. Farad, Mr. Farad, who brought the Nation of Islam idea, because he was a satyr in the wilderness of North America. That's exactly what he was, more than any other thing. He was a satyr. He used even us. He created a theater, a living, live theater, to criticize the ideas that this society built itself upon and positioned in the mind of the whole world that it's the boss, it's the God, it's the Son of God, and the God represent God on earth, you know? Believe me, that's what white supremacy thought. Thought that it was the boss, that it was God's child on earth, the white man, thought that put us down and built a world to favor them going up and favor us going down. Yep, they built that world that way. But they have repented. I never thought I would leave to see them repent, but they have. They have repented. Doesn't mean you don't have some bad ones. Don't be like that the story of that man in the Bible now. What is his name? Jonah. God revealed to him that the society, the order of the day was bad. And he was going to destroy it. So, Jonah, instead of him going to Nineveh and giving God's message to the people of Nineveh to warn them of impending destruction, what did he do? He followed the rich people.
Yeah, that's right.
And went and left the city. He traveling with the cargo,
yeah,
the commercial goods.
That's right.
And he goes to sleep,
yeah,
on the commercial goods down in the hull of the boat. Now, you know he could have slept upstairs,
right,
but he just wanted to be down there with all that wealth.
That's right.
So he slept on it. Just like a lot of these lazy black folks.
Right.
Sleeping on the white man's wealth.
That's right.
Just want to be next to it. You know, he doesn't own it, but he can rest on it.
Yeah.
He just loves it. He'll rest on it. Rest on the white man's labor.
Yeah. Come on.
Rest on his pocketbook.
That's right.
now, he goes to Nineveh. After all that experience, he picked to find Nineveh destroyed. And he get there, and Nineveh's thriving. Thriving. Nineveh's doing well. Now he thank God. He questions God now. After going through all his trouble, being thrown off the boat, etc. Now he goes back to Nineveh. He wakes up after getting in all that trouble. He wakes up and remember that he had a mission to go to Nineveh.
Right. Right.
Now he goes to Nineveh, and Nineveh's doing well.
Yeah. That's right.
Now he's questioning God. You embarrass me like this. Why you embarrass me like this? Said you're going to destroy it, and look how it's flourishing. I don't think God even answered it. But God told him in the beginning that if one repented, he wouldn't destroy Nineveh. I think he started off with three, then two. I think he said, then if one repented, he wouldn't destroy Nineveh. Now, some of us, we look at the world today with all this opportunity for African Americans. Nothing but opportunity, plenty of opportunities for you. In fact, it's changed a little bit now, but for a while, we had advantage over the white man. There were more opportunities in America for us than it was for white folks. I ain't talking about the old system. I'm talking about the new opportunities. We know the old system. They are in power. You are not. But now the door is open for you to get in power. And scholarships and paid this and paid that and all kind of assistance. And they didn't have it. They got jealous.
That's right.
And they start speaking against that. And Reagan got in. And he changed all that. President Reagan. He got in and changed all that. And it was right. It was fair. All that opportunity opened to us and we just taking advantage of it and just lazy and greedy and having fun. I know a few of us were really serious and we were doing something with our life, but majority of us were just taking advantage of all those opportunities just to live it up. Just to live it up. We weren't saying, okay, now we got a better opportunity. We got better opportunities to increase our knowledge, to become better educated, and to make more money. Let us now form an organization to start treating the social ills and other ills in our neighborhoods.
That's right.
That should have been a new movement.
That's right.
That made the NAACP obsolete.
Yes.
Yes. But instead of a new movement, no. Good times. Good times are here. So Reagan said, yeah, your time has come and gone. I think that was one of our political leaders said publicly, this is our time. And Reagan said, yeah, your time. I think he had a little bit of that disease all the way on him because he would do this. Yes, your time has come and gone. I'm not a fool. I'm not foolishly in love with democracy or foolishly in love with people. I'm sane, sober, and I'm doing justice to the situation. The white man has repented. His world has repented the evils that it put on the world of African Americans and minorities, people, other people. It has repented that evil. So we shouldn't go on, keep going on in our spirit and attitude like the white man is the devil, and while we are constantly taking over that position. Yeah, we are constantly taking over the position of the devil in the world and still pointing to the white man. Yeah, white man is the devil. Can't trust him. But you burnt me. It wasn't a white man. And I got proof that I've been burnt by black folks. Big. I mean, burnt us bad. White man didn't do that to me. I mean, recently. Yeah. Trusting them. You can't trust your own people. That's terrible. We have to change the way we look at the reality, you know. So we can make real progress. We don't have too much time left here. I'll see what I can do here. Kind of cut it short. Yes. I remember reading in the Bible first that I read the Bible after I decided to go and do a lot of reading and studying to prepare myself for the position that I finally accepted that my father told me I would come into, and that is to be a helper to him and his teacher, Mr. Farrar. So I studied a lot. I remember reading the Bible, and it said, the Bible says that there was seen a scroll, you know, the rolled up paper rolled up, like what the graduates carry at the graduation ceremony, with the ribbon around it. Yeah, a scroll was seen flying in the midst of the heavens. And the scroll was coming with a warning of time's end of time. The time is out. The time is ended. And then I read in the Quran, it's also in the Bible, that there's going to come a time when the people will no more live in the new life, in the new world, the new world, or the hereafter, the new creation. They will no more live by the light of the sun or the moon. All that will go away. And it says that that a new heaven and a new earth will be brought about. A new heaven and a new earth will be brought about. And the Quran, Allah says in the Quran, in the sky with the stars and everything we see up there, see, it's going to be rolled back as a scroll. Now, a scroll is something to read, isn't it? A scroll has some a message, some reading. So it means that what it's saying is that we won't see heaven with our uneducated minds anymore. As a foreign life and a foreign creation or a foreign world to this one, but we will see this one with new eyes, with new perception, with new understanding. And it will give us a message, as though a message coming off of a scroll. Yes. It is prophesied. It is a prophesied event. There's coming the prophesied event. Oh, what a wonderful cinch. When the stars are sent out from under their cover. When rich and poor, when young and old, behold the heavens being rolled back as a scroll. You're living in that time right now. Yes, you're living in that time right now. This is a wonderful time that we're living in. When those things that mystified us are not going to mystify us anymore, but they're going to speak to us. Intelligent human voice.
Yes, sir. All right,
sir. That's going to free up our souls. Free our souls. Freeing the soul going to free the mind to do better and greater things. I usually like to say, well, this guy's strange. This guy's either nuts or he's blinded by his own understanding or knowledge. No, I'm not. We're living in the best time that human beings have experienced on this planet Earth. No human beings ever even imagined a time like we're in in its full picture. They had hints of it because they predicted, they prophesied of it. But the full picture that we see now, they couldn't have seen that. Can you imagine what our great religious leaders of the past of 1,000 or 200,000 or even 800 years ago. Can you imagine what would happen to their minds if they would suddenly be put among us right now?
Yes.
You all be talking about the little things like cancer and this kind of stuff and discrimination and this cooperation against blacks or minorities. You'll be talking about that little stuff. They won't hear a thing you're saying. They'll be, oh, wow, see, go to the airport, see those planes take off. They just sit right there and meditate. Can't pull away from the airport. You won't be able to pull away from the airport. They just sitting out there watching planes take off. This is more than I imagined. Don't tell me I'm not in a higher heaven. But they knew that the world was going to do bigger and greater things. Bigger and better and greater things. They knew that, and they prophesied of the time to come. And they knew that that time was going to come when the intellect is completely free. The old orders, government orders, they feared what people thought. And they feared that you would think something that would challenge them and maybe sell to their publics better than what they had to give to their public. So they persecuted and killed people.
That's right.
Galileo was killed, wasn't he?
That's right.
Socrates killed, right?
Yeah.
Killing off the minds to preserve their order that they had. They didn't want nothing coming in disturbing that order. We read about the crucifixion of Jesus, the death and crucifixion and death of Jesus Christ. It ain't nothing but the story of Socrates told all over again.
That's right.
All it is. The story of Socrates told all over again.
That's right.
And whatever Socrates' story is talking about. It's the same thing the story of Jesus Christ being crucified is talking about. And that's why that whole passage is left out of the Quran. It says, no, he was not crucified. They neither crucified him nor killed him. Why? Because he was a word and a spirit from